The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Metroplex. We welcome you to a live Friday edition of Sean and RJ. Choppy out one more day on vacation. We got Cowboys insider Bobby Bell. We got Peyton Russell. We got Aiden in the back. We're live on the Fan Camp, Twitch, and YouTube. Thank you for turning it on, leaving it on, and already it is a wheels off Friday. We are not starting with the Texas Rangers today after what happened yesterday between Jerry Jones, Michael Irvin, and Micah Parsons on social media. Oh, yeah, and I just got stopped downstairs by two police officers.
Oh, yeah.
So Jerry and Michael.
How much did you have to slide them? How much cash do you have to slide them? Just be like, hey, guys, just look the other way here.
There was no cash. I was told.
Straight plastic. Just swiping.
Keep both hands. I don't have that hard plastic credit card.
The choppy thing.
Yeah, so when I bring out my debit card, they're like, pfft. We have to go and get a pin. No. But rolling stop sign.
Google me.
Was my violation this morning as I often take the back streets to stay off the hell and misery that is 30 to 75, as Peyton knows, coming in from Rockwall. Mm-hmm. And I pull into the parking lot and there's the flashing lights behind me, but there's no woo woo. And I sit there for like 30 seconds. And I'm like, well, maybe this isn't for me. Are they waiting for me to turn off my vehicle? I turn off my lights. I came to a complete stop. But maybe they're just waiting for me to shut down the car.
Came to a complete stop that time.
Yeah, right. I shut down the car. And then like 20, 30 seconds later, I was like 90% getting ready to restart and go in the garage. Because sometimes there'll be an officer sitting in our parking lot if Brian Broaddus' truck gets stolen or something else. And then finally came out and said, you rolled through a stop sign, and we've been following you for quite a while. And I was like, quite a while?
Weeks, in fact.
That's right. We've been monitoring. And I had to try to pull the radio card out. And I go, Can I text my guys that I'm going to be late for the start of the show?
Well.
And they kind of look at me sideways. And there's two police officers, so I did feel like very important. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what's up, man? How's it going? I was like, not good. Not good. Going to be late for the start of the show. He goes, well, you got the radio. You can just turn it on. I was like, no, I'm on. He thought I was like, hey, can you guys hurry this up before Casey Kasem comes on? I was like, no, I'm going to be talking on the radio. And they came back with a warning. And then he's like, what station, by the way?
Yeah, they want to listen. What's up, guys?
So thank you to the two nice police officers who gave me a warning and realized I was trying to rush to work through the back streets of Dallas.
Just trying to make sure you remember your place. That's what you got to do. You got to remember where you're at in this world.
Nah, they were nice.
Did you roll through the stop sign? Do you agree?
Yeah.
Did you roll through or blow through?
No. not a blow through, but no one's, that's the reason I take the back roads. No one's on those back streets.
Oh, here's the thing, guys. I know you guys have, if you're listening out there, I know you guys got ticket quotas and stuff like that you got to fill.
No.
McKinney Avenue.
Don't be talking about these officers
No, McKinney Avenue at 5:48 a.m. Look for that screaming Altima coming down the street that RJ Choppy's driving 90 on the McKinney Ave.
Yeah, I kind of come to the stop sign and, I'm probably going still like 5 miles an hour and then go up through it in order to get to work. So thank you to the two police officers who just gave me a warning, but did not have any idea who I was, even though I was trying to play it up.
Should have said you knew me.
No. No one knows you.
Oh. I know ball like Bobby.
Bobby knows ball, and they sound like they were ball knowers.
All right, yesterday, Michael Irvin, by the way, John Machota, what a day for him to be in studio. Final 2 hours of the program, 8 to 10. We are not starting with the Rangers because of Jerry Jones. He's going on a media tour. Why?
Because the Netflix doc is out.
Well, you'd think you'd do it before the release of the Netflix doc. He's going on Stephen A. Smith, hopefully to answer Stephen A.'s dementia questions today. I'm going to hold Stephen A.'s feet to the fire on that one. You're accusing him of being Joe Biden. You're saying he's got dementia. I think he'll play it up like, now, Jerry, I've been worried about you, man. I've been worried about your memory here and there. So maybe, but
you think he'll even do? I think he'll just pretend he never said it. It won't even come up. I don't think
he has to. He has to. Otherwise, I'm going to remind him nonstop on social media, which I'm sure he's paying close attention to, maybe the stop signs. But Michael Irvin had an hour-long discussion with Jerry Jones And the number one quote, number one headline you're going to see this morning comes from this.
When we wanted to send the details to the agent told us to stick it up our ass.
Oh, wait. Now, see, I was
just so you're clear. Yeah, Mike and I talked, and then we were going to send it over to the agent. And we had our agreements on term, amount, guarantees, everything. We were going to send it over to the agent. And the agent said, don't bother because we've got all that to negotiate. Well, I'd already negotiated. I'd already moved off my mark on several areas. And so the issue, very frankly, is we've had the negotiation in my mind. And the agent's trying to get his nose in it right now and try to come in there and improve off the mark that we'd already set. It's the mama daddy deal. You go into mama and she won't do it. And she's the boss. She won't do it. So you run into daddy. Daddy says, do it. And then you go back in, say, mama, daddy said it was all right. It's the old mama daddy deal. We've all been there and done that. Well, we've got this deal resolved in my mind for the Dallas Cowboys. And we've got it done. And if the agent wants to finish up the detail, which is should. And do all the paperwork. And he can do that. And we're ready to go. But as far as the amount of money, the years, the guarantees, all of that, we negotiate that.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know that you can say the agent's trying to stick his nose in it as if he doesn't belong in the discussion.
Jerry Jones has totally in his, and it's funny, someone pointed this out during The Gambler on Netflix. When he's talking about signing Dion, he's like, yeah, you know, Eugene Parker. He knew the agent's name, the famous Eugene Parker. So for some reason back then, he decided it was necessary to talk with Eugene Parker to get Deion Sanders to sign for $30 million. But now he is totally trying to eradicate the importance and use of agents in the National Football League. They're pointless. They're useless. They're just coming by on the street corner and trying to pick up whatever you left out on the curb.
Do you come down more on the side of he genuinely believes the agent, they shouldn't have to deal with him? Or do you think that that is specifically right there part of the negotiating tactic of, oh, I know the agent's supposed to be involved. I'm going to publicly be that dismissive, though.
I don't know. Part of me wonders whether the Cowboys' way of doing this, right? My understanding is it goes to Adam Pacifica. It goes to Stephen Jones. Mm-hmm. And then when it's the final detail, Jerry then comes in. He's not negotiating them from the very beginning. I think this is an instance of two things. Number one, 1990s Jerry still saying, Michael, you and I negotiated a contract. Was your agent in the room? So because it happened that time and because it's happened some other times, didn't happen with Dez. Dez told him, Jerry, you think you can cover me down on the field? Then why the hell do you think I can negotiate with you in person? Call my agent. Dak did not make the mistake Micah did. And Dak said, I'm not talking to you from the beginning. I'm not sitting down in a room. I'm not getting tricked. I'm not getting lured into your office.
Yeah.
You're talking to my agent from the very beginning. So I think Jerry and this whole old school mentality handshake thing is working against him. And then he's like operating like brand new Arkansas Jerry, year one, taking over the team. If he talked like this in year one and the media was covering him, they'd say, this country bumpkin doesn't know that you're supposed to get the agent involved to get the deal done. He's just going old school. And this is, again, that sense of betrayal that we worked out.
Again. Not,
we didn't just talk generally about what it would look like. We worked out the terms. We worked out the years. We worked out the guarantee, and it should be binding. It is binding. On behalf of the Dallas Cowboys, the negotiation is over. I moved off my marks. That's him saying, I went in with a certain number. I went up in terms of those categories. So that's everything I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I think that...
And Micah, you agreed. And then you run into the other parent with his mommy-daddy analogy.
I think the... I'll use a different parenting analogy. I think when you advise your kids, you say, hey, don't go... hanging around with this person or whatever else. Because you just you may think that you're going to be able to hold your own or stand up for yourself and stand up for what are your morals or your standards or whatever else. And then you're that kid goes, okay, yeah, sure. And then they go, nah, I can hang around this kid. Like it's not going to be a problem. I'll be fine. And then you start realizing, oh, there is a pull here that's really, really difficult. I am out of my depth a little bit. And I think that Micah thought, I can quietly have this meeting and I can handle it. People think it's a little too much for me. I'll be fine. And I think he got in that meeting and he went, uh-oh, nope. Okay, we got to back out of this now. And I got to, yeah. I don't think he intended to sign anything, but I think he thought, I can sit here and have a meeting with Jerry and it's not a problem.
Yeah.
And I think he found out really quick, oh no, Jerry's been here for forever. You referenced the gambler. As we're going to find out, and then we talk about the gambler. This is the last couple episodes we've watched that display the absolute, regardless of anything else you would think about Jerry as a football man, as a businessman and as a negotiator and his impact on the NFL and the way he stares down the most powerful negotiators in the NFL and tells them, F you, and I'm going to win, and he does win. That's a dangerous person to try and sit across from and think you're going to be able to hold your own. And Dez knew, I can't do it. I'm not going to do that.
Jerry gets into more details on why this offer should have been good enough.
I have agreed to give more money than has ever been given in terms of guaranteed money than anyone ever has as far as a defensive player. I've done that. Now, I am the cat that writes the check. Okay? Now, Mike has got 3 years with the Cowboys left. He's got 3 years. At some point, somebody has to have the say over the other. At some point, it has to be that way. My job is managing the check. Okay? Mike has got to do the playing. Where's the least important part of this whole equation we're talking about? What is the least incremental part of the whole equation? The attorney or the agent? Okay? He works for Micah. Okay? He's not the principal here in any way. In any way. They're in here to make their percentage. They're in here to basically, yes, advise Micah. Come over to the office and I'll show you exactly what I offered Micah. We got it in the back. It's with all written down, everything to go.
Interesting that when he says it's written down, okay, on a napkin, he's got what does he have written, or does he have a contract drawn up?
And Jerry's trying to say, well, we didn't, Jane Slater was the first to say, my understanding was it was never put on paper. And Jerry would come back and say, we tried to send it over. Jerry, the agent told us to stick it, which I think Jerry then kind of followed up with an unofficial retraction by saying, well, the agent was basically saying, don't bother, I wasn't involved. And Jerry's like, you're just here to notarize a piece of paper. It's all worked out. You want to look over the legal. Seriously, he's diminishing.
Yeah, he thinks of him as he's notary public, basically. Like, oh, we got to have somebody. You're just here to like say, no, we've already got this place. That, yeah.
It's notarize exactly it. That's all you have to stamp.
Yeah. Yep.
You put your little agent stamp on it. I mean, it's so demeaning.
But I think he has to know better. That's why I think this has to be like a very public, like I'm going to diminish what he's done and what his role is, because I think Jerry has to know, like, no, this is an equal.
Well,
but I'm not going to treat you like an equal.
He's also trying to turn us on Micah and the agent by having us, and you already see it on social media. Well, should I start blaming the agent that they wouldn't even take the offer? Why would you not get the offer, look at it, and counter back versus just saying, don't even bother to send it? Oh my God, most guaranteed money? That's a blinking light, like I dealt with downstairs in the parking lot statement. I offered him the most guaranteed money non-quarterback in the National Football League. Fans are going to hear that and say, dude, he's offering you the most guaranteed non-quarterback money. Well, the most guaranteed non-quarterback money is Myles Garrett at 123.5. Then Bosa at 119. Then TJ at 108. We thought Jerry said near $200 million in training camp. So maybe he's gone to 180. And maybe he's saying, I offered you 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. It could have been $60 million more guaranteed than Myles Garrett, who currently holds that crown And that will have fans and that will have media saying, well, damn, Mike, like, what else are you asking for? How much over the moon are you going? And David Mulugeta, why didn't you take the offer? Why didn't you look at the offer?
Yeah, and I think
he's going to do it again today with Stephen A.
I think it's been, if you want to be honest, it's been effective to this point. I am seeing a bigger swing on social media in the last day or two of people saying, this is on Micah. Like you're starting to get more of that sense. So, look, it is so much he said, she said, and that's so, what's so difficult of nailing this down. I think that it is, I think, again, if we reverse the roles and say, if the salary cap guys were negotiating Micah's deal and just told you, hey, we got it done, we're just going to sign it ourselves, Jerry wouldn't go for that. Jerry would go, no, Steven and I need to look over it and approve it.
Well, as you would expect, Micah Parsons has responded to Jerry multiple times. Micah's response next on Sean and RJ 105.3 The Fan.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's preview tonight and get his thoughts on yesterday's fireworks. It's Nick Eatman, DallasCowboys.com, brought to you by the Windstar World Casino and Resort. Proud to be the casino of the Dallas Cowboys. Please game responsibly. We'll crosstalk with KNC at Freebirds today. If you want to get your lunch there on Beltline in Dallas, we got John Machota in studio as a guest co-host. And I know you absorb a lot of talk radio. Do you like doing talk radio? This is your first time up here ever?
It is my first time up here, but yeah, I love it. I love podcasting. I enjoy talking about sports more than the writing side of it. Like, I'm not this traditional, I got into journalism because I love writing or whatever. I got into journalism because it would get me into watching sports and paid to watch sports all the time, you know? And so I think I've gotten better over the years, but like, it is definitely not. I'm not like some naturally like good writer or anything like that.
I think you are. Nick would agree.
Let's get this clip real quick for Nick of Jerry on Michael Irvin's podcast. And they're like, why are we even here with Micah? Why didn't you pay him earlier like all the other stars?
I would like to list right beside that the ones that I paid early that I wish I hadn't paid early, relatively speaking. The ones that I have paid as early as what we're talking about here that I shouldn't have paid early, that we should have. I've seen a few more things come down the pike. And so let me say this. I have never not written a check because of having paid the players I paid early. I've never not written a check to get that done. So it hasn't kept me from being able to write a check. And keep this in mind, what you're paying a player for, a player, not in any way. I'm the biggest fan in the world, and I appreciate what a player has done up until that point, especially one that has really, really done well enough to be in the top 10 or 12% of the paid players. But none of what you're paying him is for what he's done in the past. Not a cent. It's all about what he's going to do.
He's 26. I don't understand this.
But he could get hit by a car.
What he's going to do, Nick Eatman, help me, Nick. What did you think of all this with Michael Irvin and Jerry yesterday?
Well, I won't say exactly what I think about all of it, but it was really the timing of it that just seems to really suck. I mean, this is somebody that's putting out their own, our own Deep Blue documentary, and I swear we can't get any other news tonight. Like, it can't be a slow news day either. It's an 8-part series from Jerry getting put out 2 days before, or then this. Anyways, I agree with all of that. As far as the part of you pay what's going to happen, and I think Jerry has been burned over the years. I mean, we're talking way back. You know, back in the Aikman, Emmett, Irvin, you know, Dion, all of that about paying for what they've done and not for what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So, but I don't, you know, you say he's 26. I think it's more about, are you going to, and this isn't just Micah, this is everybody. Are you going to continue to to be as hungry, work as hard, do all of the things, the film, the study, everything that it takes for you to be at the top of your game. Are you going to do that just the same as you did before? Are you going to take your foot off the gas a little bit? So it's not about he's got 5 or 6 more years, but are they going to be the same 5 or 6 years that got him to this point in the contract?
Nick,
and I think that.
Sorry, Nick and John Michaud, the same question. Do you think there's a difference in questioning Micah's work ethic or doing all the training and being ready to go compared to Dak and Lamb? You have a question more about Micah with that? Nick, I'll start with you.
I don't think it's about work ethic like that. I think, you know, they keep throwing the leadership part of it. I just think it's the hunger, it's the desire. But I've never understood that with Micah. I just think he might be different than some others in his own way, but he's ready to go. I don't feel like he is ever a guy that you would have to question.
Yeah.
From a standpoint of like, you know, is he going to be ready? Is he going to get his body ready? He's going to do it in his own, you know, unconventional ways, but I don't think he's ever said he's not ready to go.
What do you think of that, John?
Yeah, I agree with Nick. I don't think of him as not being ready in terms of his conditioning and being prepared. And I think we'll see that in the opener. I think he's going to play, and I think it's going to be on very, obviously he isn't going to have training camp behind him, and I think he's going to play well. The thing for me with Micah is, it's honestly, and I know a lot of people think this is stupid, but I'm telling you, this stuff matters in sports. It's body language. It's the way, like, even at these practices, the way he sits and he's just kind of like, I don't want to be there. It's times at practice where, you know, the team's stretching, and it's not this year, but in the past, where like he's just kind of off, just kind of doing his own thing, doesn't really care about this part of it. You know, like there's little things like that that I'm telling you, like, it is a big thing with a lot of people about the body language, especially when you're the team's best player. You are the team's most talented player. I've made the argument, and I will continue to make the argument, that he is the biggest reason for 3 consecutive 12-win seasons. He's not the only reason. It's not that there aren't other people that are on there, but when they got him, things changed. And so he has all of that. They just need a little bit of the other stuff.
You know, I wonder how much of the, when it comes down to, like, for instance, in comparison to Dak and Lamb, Dak is the leader of their work ethic group. Like, he's the guy that's out there all the time and overworking and different things like that. I don't think Mike has got a conditioning problem. If anything else, and Nick, you might be able to speak to this, or you can ignore it if you feel like it's too close. But I think the bigger question is just, sometimes, has Micah always been prepared the right way in the classroom at times? Like, has he been present for all of the different things that he needs to do? Has he spent enough time on task with his work? Is he out there knowing his assignment just down 100% every single time? That, to me, I think is a bigger question for them in terms of preparation than the conditioning itself.
Right. And especially now, especially with the next contract, because, and you know, Dez Bryant's been mentioned a few times in some of this, and Dez is, I think, a good example of this. His first 4 or 5 years, you could just go out athlete people. You were better than them, and you could go and do it. It didn't matter where you were lining up. But the last few years of when you you couldn't do that the same. The athletes got better. Age catches up to everybody, and now you have to kind of figure out different ways to be savvy, and you're out running and all the things to kind of prolong your career. And that's where I think it was tougher for him to dominate. And I think that's for any player. Same with Mike. Go out there. If you're not prepared as much, that's fine. Just go beat the guy off the edge and get to the quarterback.
Yeah. Well,
you know, when that slows down or the injuries kind of pile up, how are you going to take it to the next level? But that's not just a Micah thing. That's every player from 25 to 30, you know, maybe 27 to 32. It's figuring that part out. And I think that's a question that, you know, I want to see that list that Jerry's talking about. I want to see, I think I know one player that he's probably referring to, but I'd like to see some others that he thinks, you know what, I might have done this differently had I known how things were going to play out.
Hey, Nick, what do you think about his body size and body type for that position and the longevity at that position? Because it's always something for me that I've wondered, like, will this get to a point where it's just like all pro, all pro, all pro, and then it just starts, you're like, yeah, I don't know. It seems like, and then there's the injuries and things like that. Do you think about that at all with him?
Yeah, because I do. And the thing about it is, if you just watch him, if you just look at him, look at the body type, it doesn't add up to how great he is. You know, he's got this like strength about him that, you know, and he's not crazy like this. This is probably not a great example at all, but like, why was Dennis Rodman like the best rebounder? Like, why? And he just was. I mean, he wasn't the biggest, strongest, but he just figured it out. I mean, and here's another one, maybe a better example. Charles Haley didn't look like he would be like the most menacing Myles Garrett type, but he was.
Yeah.
It's a combination of everything, and it's strength inside that you just don't necessarily see, and how to use your hands and how to push and all that. So you say that about the body size. Yeah, it's all it's going to change it, you know, in these next 5 years or so. And so, I think you do worry about that. But then again, the contract he's trying to get, you certainly wouldn't put that on a linebacker. So he's in that in-between role that I guarantee it's been a part of the discussion, if there have been discussions.
Nick Eatman, DallasCowboys.com. Before we preview tonight, Nick, anything else from yesterday's interview that really jumped out to you, surprised you, or changed your mind about this outcome with Jerry and Michael Irvin discussing?
The biggest surprise was just how quiet Michael was. Michael's just doing like the nod thing, you know, it's just like, you know, now he wanted to talk a lot too, but it's funny, you know, Michael being on the other end of it though, just watching that dynamic was kind of interesting because Jerry is just dropping gold here, you know, but I do give Michael credit for it. He was just like, wait, hold on. What did you say?
Yeah.
You know, it was definitely an interesting thing. I can't think of one or two things because I had heard some of that. I mean, you'd heard that there was a deal in place and that basically, you know, Jerry's basically saying we don't need the agent until it's time to, you know, turn it in and things like that. And I don't know if I disagree with him, but I think that's the operations he's done in the past. And for this reason, it's not, you know, it's not what's on the table. But it sounds like there's got to be more to it than just a couple of, you know, I's to dot and T's to cross. I feel like there's more to it there, but who knows?
Nick, who is on your watch list for tonight? Who is tonight important for against the Falcons?
I mean, I hate to say the obvious, but, you know, you have to figure out what's going on at quarterback. I mean, you have to see I just wonder what the Cowboys are thinking about their next plan. If Milton doesn't play well, doesn't give them, and I don't think he's going to do anything tonight to say, oh, he's the backup. I think it's very clear he's probably not ready to be the backup. So I don't know, you know, that they want to see one more time. But I bet you Trey Lance, it was clear at this point, too. They still played him. He needs reps. But what's the plan after that? Because if it is Will Greer, I'd like to see Will Greer get some snaps, too.
Yeah.
So that it makes me wonder that they have something else in mind with another player that maybe isn't on the roster. Because if not, then I don't know why the backup quarterback isn't getting more reps with your team, because I just don't feel like there's any way it could be Milton.
Awesome stuff, brother. We appreciate it. Enjoy tonight. We'll recap Monday.
All right. See you guys.
Nick Eatman, DallasCowboys.com, brought to you by the Windstar World Casino and Resort. What's on your watch list for tonight, John?
Milton, obviously, that's number one for everything that Nick said, so I won't have to add too much to that. So after that, for me, is Jaden Blue. I mean, he's a running back. I think he'll have a major role in this offense, even as early as week one. And I think that he's a guy that probably gets the second most touches at running back this season, if not first, behind Javonte Williams. We'll see there. So he has been dealing with an ankle injury. He'll play in this game. That's a big one to watch there. Wide receiver, with Mingo being out, that opens the door for another receiver. To me, the leader in the clubhouse is Ryan Flannoy. I know fans won't like that because they want Trayshon Holden, because I'll be honest with you, Trayshon Holden shows up, and I totally get it why fans want him. I just think Flannoy, he fits better with what they had in Mingo. He helps more on special teams, and he's been in the, you know, in the building and around. I think that they probably trust him a little bit more. But Holden, I'm telling you, like, for every year we're out at training camp, there's all these Andy Jones, Dennis Houston, John Bea Johnson. Like, he, to me, is definitely the best one out of any of those guys. And it annoys me when people say, oh, you're just saying that because every year there's one of these. No, Trayshon Holden, there's something there, to the point where I kind of wonder, like, do they not play him in the first half of these preseason games because they want to try and slide him through and get him back on the practice squad? Because he's got, I'm telling you, he flashes at practice as much as any receiver not named CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens, and probably Kevontae Turpin. He would probably be your next guy in terms of ones that have stood out. So, and then defensive tackle. You know, Nick mentions maybe there's another move at quarterback. It's hard for me not to believe that there's not another move at defensive tackle if you don't see enough from Mozzie Smith. I don't know how you can go into the season with these defensive tackles.
If Mozzie Smith plays in the second half tonight, he's in trouble.
Yeah.
Micah Parsons has responded to yesterday. Doesn't mean anything. And I'm going to give you John Machota's masterclass for free as we crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece live from Freebirds on Beltline next.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
8 o'clock hour here on your home of the Cowboys and Rangers. Sean Sharif, Bobby Bell with Choppy out on vacation till next week. Happy Friday. Thanks for being a total. That stands for Turn It On, Leave It On. The KNC Masterpiece doing their show from Freebirds on Beltline in Dallas today. Starting with Crosstalk at 9:40. We got a special treat in studio. And we did not schedule him after the Michael Irvin, Jerry Jones interview. We had him booked beforehand for the next 2 hours. The great John Machota. When I'm going to Twitter, this is true, I go to John first, then I'm probably going maybe to Nick Harris, and then I don't know number three. If I want the perspective on the whole thing and the thoughts, I might check out Hellman.
Somewhere he'll get to me.
Well, you don't, I mean.
No, I know. You come to me for humor.
You're kind of like a really, really, really poor man's Jay Glazer in that you don't get as big a stories as Jay. But you don't do the quantity. You're not all over the waiver wire. You're like picky and choosy of what you want to put out.
And I get McCarthy hired too.
John's on everything. So John, thanks for joining us in studio.
No, thanks for having me. I when I got on Twitter when I first moved down here about 15 years ago, I was trying to do everything Dallas, like tweet out Mav stuff, whatever. And they were good. I mean, they won the title in 11. But over the last 10 years, I've been like, I'm not going to even. You know, when I got this hot take about watching some random NBA game, I'm just not going to, I just want my timeline just to be all Cowboys for exactly what you're saying. So people will just be like, hey, like I was working today or maybe I was out of town on vacation. I just want to catch up on Cowboys stuff. I try and keep it as much Cowboys as possible.
Yeah, so. We try to ask Florio and like Ross Tucker, like, why don't you follow us back? They're like, I don't want to hear your thoughts on the Rangers. I don't need your Dallas Stars second period breakdown.
Do you guys want all of Florio's thoughts on everything?
No.
Neither does the fan text.
I was worried about John coming in here being a little reserved, but this start.
So, no, John, you know what I'm curious about? Because everybody always says this on Twitter. Is you're always in the exact position.
I want to say that. Okay. I got a whole, I'm gonna have John teach a Twitter seminar coming up a little bit. I got a bunch of different questions. I'm gonna milk him for this right here.
And we'll have him grade my meme later that I've created for him.
That's right. And Bobby's comedy. Please just tell him how funny he is so we can get this out of the way. Jerry Jones for an hour with Michael Irvin saying, we made this offer. The agent told us to shove it up our ass. And then David, John, went into detail a little bit more.
I have agreed to give more money than has ever been given in terms of guaranteed money than anyone ever has as far as a defensive player. I've done that. Now I am the cat that writes the check. Okay? Now, Mike has got 3 years with the Cowboys left. He's got 3 years. At some point, somebody has to have the say over the other. At some point, it has to be that way. My job is managing the check. Okay. Micah's got to do the playing. Where's the least important part of this whole equation we're talking about? What is the least incremental part of the whole equation? The attorney or the agent? Okay. He works for Micah. Okay. He's not the principal here in any way. They're in here to make their percentage. They're in here to basically. Yes, advise Micah, come over to the office and I'll show you exactly what I offered Micah. We've got it in the back. It's all written down, everything to go.
John, give us your thoughts on this yesterday.
So I can see both sides on this. I can see the Jerry side because of the fact that just in my time covering the team, if you take care of Jerry, Jerry will take care of you for the rest of your life. Now, obviously, where you're Micah Parsons, your life's going to last a lot longer than what Jerry Jones has left, but Jerry is fiercely loyal to his star players, so I get where he's coming from there. But he's also the man that says, just because I said it doesn't make it so. So when he says the thing, like, I find it very hard to believe that David Mulligetta said those words back to him.
Yeah.
But I don't think in the year 2025, really any in the last 5-10 years, that you can think that are you really thinking you're getting this deal done without an agent being involved? Like, when you drafted Micah Parsons, like, we're not going to pretend you don't know who David Mulligetta is. You didn't know that this was going to happen. And so for me, this screams of back in March, like, let's start talking about this right now. We can get everything, and then we'll bring in David to just sign everything off. But even in Jerry's mind, as great of a businessman as he is, he has to know that David was going to be involved at some point, that he's going to want to do. He's going to have his hand in it. He has some of the biggest contracts in all of sports.
So why do you think he's doing it like this then? Why do you think Jerry's like playing like, David, you're here to notarize this when we, the principals, get it worked out? Why take this approach?
Well, just like even if for people that don't follow the Cowboys closely, if you just watch the series on Netflix, you can just tell that there might not be anybody in sports with a bigger ego than Jerry Jones. And he is not going to let some agent come in there and be the big name that wins this deal, even though it did happen with Todd France twice. And he probably doesn't want it. He's probably tired of that. But it's like, we all sit there and go, Jerry loves his star players. Is he really going to let this guy walk? Like, nobody believes that. There's a far greater chance that he is just completely dug in and is just like, well, then don't play Micah. Don't play next year. Don't play the year after that. Don't play, you know. I mean, I'm from Detroit, and I never thought the Lions would be like, no, Barry Sanders, you're playing here or you're leaving. And basically did the same thing with Calvin Johnson. So if they're going to do that, the guy that has kept a grudge this long with Jimmy Johnson, how angered he is right now, I find it very hard to believe. That's my whole thing when I talk to people, because I don't believe this contract's getting done before the season starts. And so the people that say to me that they think it's getting done, I go, I just want the simple answer then from you. This is the thing that fascinates me the most. Who makes the first call? Because yeah. I see both sides being extremely dug in. Like, I'm talking, put them in owner's boxes right next to each other on that Thursday night, and I can see them not talking.
Yeah.
Walking by each other on the sideline before the game and not talking.
Yeah.
So that's the part for me where both sides seem so dug in that I don't know who makes the first move.
Publicly, Jerry's discussion has been very focused on David Mulligetta, the agent, of just like, this is basically who he's frustrated with. You're trying to insert yourself in something, you know. Is that a subtle way, though, of privately, he might be a little more frustrated with Micah than he is Mulligetta? I feel like Mulligetta is basically just the public, like, target for what is ultimately frustration he has, particularly with Micah. And I don't think he's particularly happy with Micah.
No, I think that's fair. I've felt since the start of training camp that it was more Micah versus Jerry than Micah versus the Cowboys. And I think since his statement on August 1st, I believe that even more. That they're both completely dug in. For him to put out that statement, that is just such a, unlike a Cowboys player to do. Now, you know, Jerry says he's had all these trade requests. Yeah, behind the scenes. You've never had it publicly like that. And like, when I saw him fire that off, I was like, well, there's no way that this thing's getting done in the next couple of weeks. Because the last thing Jerry will want is, oh yeah, all you got to do is have some strong statement on social media, and then I'll make a deal done with you.
And in that statement, John, something that could have really, really stung Jerry, Micah basically said that he was tricked. Like, he may have misrepresented what the meeting was. Like, you lured me in. You tricked me, when maybe it's possible Micah knew he was going in there for a negotiation, and he did not say that in his trade demand. So it's not only are you reneging, not only are you misrepresenting, but you're making it seem like I'm like this creep who, under false pretenses, had you come in this room and then try to blindside a young, naive businessman.
That this is why sports is so great and why it's so fun to talk about sports. because there are so many different sides to it. Because while I believe what you're saying, and I think that there is a good chance that's right, there is the part of me being around Micah these last few years. I'm talking about not on the record. I'm talking about just talking to him in his locker. He is a very bright, sharp guy. I could see a part of him thinking he can go toe-to-toe with
yeah.
And I'm sorry, but there's no way I would believe he puts out that statement without at least David Mulligetta or somebody else reading it over
yeah.
or at least making some suggestions, and that can easily be something that's part of it. And don't get me wrong, I still don't believe that even if that is the case, even if you go in there, you have the best business sense and you're like, I'm going to go toe-to-toe with Jerry Jones and I'm going to win this thing. At the end of the day, you still know that your agent is far greater in this, that, okay, yeah. I might get the parameters set, but he's going to come in here and he's going to, you know, cross the T's and dot the I's. So, but Micah's really sharp on a lot of different topics. It's not just a football thing.
John Machota from the Athletic In Studio here on The Fan. If Micah went in knowing it was a negotiation, and like Jerry says, agreed, who do you then blame for this? Jerry for not realizing Micah was going to get the ultimate sign-off from the agent where things could change? Or Micah for the old school, handshake, look you in the eye, and the years, the guarantees, the terms are done?
Oh, that's on Jerry. He can't possibly believe that.
I agree.
I mean, Micah Parsons is still a kid to me, you know? I mean, you can't really think that that's... And I'm sure there are players that has been done in the past. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying that he's never had
those. He signed that with Irvin yesterday. He's yeah. like, me and you did it.
Right.
We didn't need your agent.
For sure. But in these days that we're in right now, I mean, the thing I keep going back to is there's no way that Jerry Jones isn't familiar with the Deshaun Watson contract. And I don't care whether you want to say it publicly or not as an owner. That had to impress you. Probably angered you because it raised the level of guarantees in the league and stuff. But you had to be like, wow, I can't believe that with what he had, the baggage and all of that, he got that for that guy. Like, there's no way that you don't know who he is after that. And that's just one. There's so many clients that Dave Mulligetta has. I mean, he's clear. I mean, to me, and Bobby, you know this probably better than anybody, that to me, it's David and Todd France, and then there's like another level,
mm-hmm.
and then there's another level down where maybe if it was another level down, this gets done, and maybe on that handshake thing with Micah, he can convince a different agent. But these two guys, that's not happening with them.
And it's not just that. Like, I mean, you could make an argument it's David, it's Todd France, and then you could probably throw in there, if not a step below, Tory Dandy.
Yeah.
And you're talking about in
that Lamb?
Last year, that's Lamb. Yeah. Tory Dandy and Todd France beat you. And now here's the third one, the third prime. Are you going to lose this one too? And they've never, in all their years that they've sat here, they've never had a like big time Mulligetta client in the building. This is the first time they will sit across from him and negotiate a big deal.
Mm.
They negotiated like Malik Hooker. Like, they've gotten that done. They've done some different things. But this is like a big time client of his. This is the very first one that they've ever had that they've sat across from. And it is the guy. This is the NFL version of Boris in the 90s yeah. or Rosenhaus at some point. Like, that is what David Mulligetta is now.
And at John's point, maybe Jerry has got wind of that. And Jerry, this is the hot shot now. This is the number one Forbes. And maybe Jerry.
That's why you don't say his name. That's exactly what I'm going to
put. Oh, really? Oh, that's the hot shot?
Yeah.
To me?
Who?
To Jerry Jones?
I don't even know who he is.
I will say, though, I was with a couple other people walking off with Jerry recently, and we were talking about that Landman thing, and he couldn't think of John Hamm's name, and he brought that up. He goes, yeah, you guys get on me about this agent thing. I forgot. Yeah, that's who it is, John Hamm.
Yeah.
I will say, it was 8 years here in the organization. He could still never figure out his name was Kellen. So, I mean, it's possible. Fair. It is possible.
So, John, your order of outcome right now is what? In all likelihood. No deal, and Micah plays all the games that he can. One?
Yes. I would go with that. You don't have to go another one. I think that is the option, yeah.
Okay. No deal, and Micah doesn't play?
That's possible, but it's just such a small... And the reason why I say this is because... So there is an argument to be made that he was willing to sit out his final year at Penn State,
mm-hmm.
the pandemic year, to just prepare for the draft. So he has been away from football for an extended period of time. But I just find it hard to believe that a guy that has been showing up to training camp, that, you know, has been going to the meetings, who I do think has a legitimate bond with his teammates and with Brian Schottenheimer and the new coaching staff, that I think he could separate it as it's me versus Jerry, not me versus my teammates and Brian and maybe even other people in the organization. Like, you know, there's a lot of people that pointed out during training camp how much when this is going on that he's over there talking to Will McClay. Mm-hmm. Like, they got a great relationship, you know, so it's not like he hates the Cowboys. So I think people need to remember that when they see him scrubbing his social media accounts.
John lives in the locker room. You all know that when you follow him on social media. What would this do to the Cowboys season? Like, are we already finished with this before it even begins? Inside Schottenheimer's culture, he'll answer your season questions, your final roster questions, all on the D&M Leasing Hotline at 877-881-1053 to get in your questions on the text or phone. For John Machota in studio for the rest of the show, we continue on Sean and RJ. 8 o'clock hour here on your official home of the Texas Rangers and Cowboys. It's Sean and Bobby. Thanks for being a Tolo. That stands for turn it on, leave it on. You can go check out the G-Bag Nation today at Jake's in Fort Worth after Rangers Royals in the afternoon. And then you are going to get Fan Phenom hosted by Zach Wolchuk, co-hosted by Zach Wolchuk, because you're going to be on the other microphone about to join our squad up here with DFW Sports Station. Wide receiver market is being talked about, Bob. Let's go around the rest of the NFL real quick. And some deals were made yesterday. Philadelphia started this off with a deal with Houston, A.J. Brown. The Eagles, we haven't talked about this at all. The Eagles are dealing with a number of injuries as well. A.J. Brown has not been practicing. N'Kobe Dean seems to be banged up again, which that's all he's been coming out of college since Filthy drafted him. San Francisco is banged up at wide receiver, looking to make some moves. And the wide receiver market is thirsty right now.
Yeah, it is. It's starting to bubble up a little bit. You've got a report from Diana Russin. Yesterday, we initially heard that Minnesota was in the market for a wide receiver. You've got the Jordan Addison suspension. They've had some injuries along the way. So Minnesota's looking for a receiver. Well, Diana Russin circled back around and mentioned a couple other teams that are going to be looking for wide receivers, including the San Francisco 49ers and the New York Jets. So, all right, what does the wide receiver market have to do with anything? Well, we have been sitting here trying to figure out how do we get Trayshon Holden or Ryan Flannoy or a Jalen Brooks on the roster when the receiver core is pretty set ahead of you. And the name that keeps coming up, the one that seems to make the most sense for just about everybody, would be Jalen Tolbert. And him now entering his fourth year and being a little bit of a disappointment, could you potentially flip him to a team and get something in return? So as we look at those three teams and what options they have, I'm going to go through potential trade options where you just tell me you would rather have Jalen Tolbert or you would rather have this deal that would potentially be on the table. So from the Minnesota Vikings, you can trade Jalen Tolbert, and in return, you can get Sam Howell, quarterback. Are you in or are you out, Sean?
You know, I think I... Oh, gosh. I can hear RJ. What if Sam Howell doesn't play? It's a backup quarterback. Doesn't matter. It's wasted money. I'd rather have Sam Howell than Will Grier. Let me start there. I'd rather have Sam Howell be my backup quarterback than Will Grier or Joe Milton. Am I okay with the Tolbert substitute here at wideout? Enough to give him away for someone who may not step on the field and obviously is not a great quarterback.
But you
I
feel
think
like-
I'd be okay with doing it because... Everyone thinks Dak is going to miss some games. Sam Howell can run around and win a game for you.
Yeah, and that's the, I think if you're just talking about like, hey, get me by guy with his little Sam, like he's got the little Baker Mayfield build to him. He's like a shorter guy, kind of stocky or whatever else. I wouldn't want him playing consistently, obviously. If you're going to lose Dak for the whole season or something like that, yeah, we're going to talk about saying let's go ahead and move on from this.
But I think I'd be okay with that. You?
I'm in favor of it. I'm all good with it. All right, the New York Jets, they have 4 sixth-round picks next year. So you say Jalen Tolbert gets you a sixth-round pick in return. Are you in or are you out?
For a six?
Mm-hmm.
And then my wide receiver room without Tolbert's going to look like what?
It would be CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens, Kevontae Turpin, and then in all likelihood when he's healthy, Jonathan Mingo, and then you would have Trayshon Holden, Jalen Brooks, or one of those guys.
Oh, man. I think I'm saying no to that. I think I'm too shaky with the wide receiver room, even though Holden apparently bought out again in practice yesterday. We'll talk to Tommy Yarsh about that at 9:20. If Turpin can't get it done, now Choppy's scaring me with Turpin as the three. If Turpin's too small and Holden's too inexperienced or hurt, no, I'm not doing that. You?
Yeah, I think I am, because I look at it and I go, I want
for a six.
I want some.
A six is nothing.
I know, but I want some space freed up a little bit.
For who?
Like I just
for
I want
Trayshawn?
Yeah, I want to be able to have one of the younger, cheaper players in there.
Jalen's young and cheap,
but we've seen 3 years of it. And it's like it's not what it was supposed to be.
He led the team in touchdown catches. That's your third wideout.
Yeah, like I mean, what am I?
Is any? Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Let's just say.
I would have Turpin over, yeah.
Let's say Tolbert's dealt. Mm-hmm. Will anyone have better numbers than Tolbert did last year from the number three spot?
Probably not, but I mean, Tolbert was the two last year. So that's the thing.
And you have Pickens now.
Yeah, and so, like, I mean, I think Pickens will put up better numbers as the two than...
But still, 49 for 6'10 and 7.
Yeah.
I'm not betting on a number three having better numbers than that, replacing him.
Yeah, I mean...
Definitely not the touchdown.
Not as a number three, but I mean, that's again, like the number three is not going to see the same action. I do think Turpin as the number three this year will be better than Tolbert as the number three.
Okay.
So I think you're getting better there. And then the final one.
And don't get me wrong, I want to start off with Turpin at number three. I want to start there, but just in case, I need the Tolbert safety net.
And then finally, the one we're going to go with is from the 49ers.
What the hell is going on right now?
What's he on?
Gary on Fox News?
That's what it looked like.
Oh, okay. Google that, Pepe, and let's see if there's anything to pull from that. I'll be like, Jerry Jones previewing the season on Fox News. Go ahead.
And finally, another disappointment. 31 years old. Call up the 49ers and say, just give us Fabian Moreau back, the cornerback. Who Fabian Moreau was a previous third-round pick for the Washington Commanders in 2017. He's been okay during his career. He's gotten banged up a lot. But the value of Fabian Moreau is that's somebody with 8 years of experience playing in the NFL who is... played in the nickel a lot and would give you another nickel corner that you could potentially have. It's just he's not been a guy who has reached his potential. You're probably looking at a guy who's better than Andrew Booth by a little bit. Like I would say he's a little bit better and he can play the nickel consistently and he's got experience. So, but he's 31 years old and he does have a history getting banged up and he is on the back end of the Niners depth chart right now.
Nah.
No, you'd rather have Tolbert?
When you said a little bit better than Andrew Booth, no. Not doing it.
I want to, but I mean, like, let's say how much work is Tolbert going to get that it wouldn't be worth just having another guy you could throw at corner right now?
Well, just give me someone. I'd like to find someone better than a little bit better than Andrew Booth. So I'm saying no to that. What are you saying?
I would say yes.
All right.
I would honestly say yes to all three of these because I want the space. And then if you can get me anything in return, the one that I would be most hesitant about might be Sam Howell. Just because it's like they've got Milton. They're committed to Milton. To me, it's just that's who they like. And so that would be the one that I might have a little hesitancy on. But I would take all three of the deals.
The Giants shutting down any Jameis talk for other teams that may be looking at him. So I don't know whether this is leveraging or totally shutting down.
Yeah, I mean, you could be, all you're doing is just, hey, there's a market out here for him. So let's talk it up as if we're not going to do it. But Assistant General Manager Brandon Brown told reporters on Tuesday, I appreciate that people are interested, but Jameis Winston is a New York Giant. And then went on further to just say, we're not looking at dealing any of our quarterbacks right now. Jackson Dart's been great. But Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, they are staying here. They are staying in place. We're not giving those up. I can't imagine anybody being like super committed to we have to keep Jameis Winston. Like if you've already got Russell Wilson and you've invested capital in Jackson Dart, I don't know why Winston would be like, no, you're not going to touch our third quarterback.
What would you trade for Winston if you're here? You're going to trade a third pick?
No,
a third rounder. A third pick for another backup.
Yeah, seven that can become a six. If I was in the Giants position, I would take that. Because I'm just like, yeah, sure, you can. All right, we're not going to use him. If we've got Jackson Dart in place and we've got Russell Wilson, that's what we've got.
Tony Grossi, the guy who Baker Mayfield, when you're in, I guess, a smaller market like this, you can make a name for yourself as this annoying look-at-me reporter. Baker Mayfield has called him out. Many people for a long time. He had his run-in with Shedeur Sanders the other day, and these athletes are, like, paying attention to it. They're giving him the Skip Bayless-type energy that he wants. Well, this is Tony Grossi yesterday asking Myles Garrett about his eighth speeding ticket since joining the Browns in 2017.
What is it like to be in that car and seeing that speedometer creep up toward 100,
I'd honestly rather talk about football on this team than anything I'm doing off field, other than the back to school, you know, event that I did the other day.
But still, I mean, people want to know.
People want to know a lot of things.
to be fair, this apparently was not Tony Grossi who asked it.
Oh, wasn't?
It was Jeff Schudel or Schudel. He is a reporter for the News, Herald, and Morning Journal.
Okay, my apologies, Tony. Twitter had Tony Grossi strikes again. What a douchebag way to ask that question. Tell us what it's like. As the RPMs
red. What's the rush you feel? How great is it?
Put us in the car. Tell us what it's like, but it's getting to 105. You feel like Vin Diesel or one of those Fast and Furious. What a freaking loop. But I will say this on the other side. I'm annoyed with Myles Garrett.
Oh, I would ask. You need to ask about it. Yeah. Eight times.
Like, dude, you do have. I'm not saying the children are our future and singing a Whitney song here. But you do have, like, kids watching you, and you already flipped your car, and eight times you've gone 100 plus or been busted for speeding. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, if you've got that many speeding tickets on there at that point, we're talking about
eight.
Yeah, you need to be asked about responsibility to your team, responsibility to everyone. Like, there's way
they
to
just
ask
paid you
other than to just be like, dude, do you get a rush of the splat you hear when you potentially run over someone? It's like, what are you? How are you asking this question like this? Yes. I would have, like, I'm stunned. Miles didn't just like come down there and go, like, come here. let me show you the rush I feel right now. Come here. Like,
all right,
it's bad.
That's around the NFL. Where are we with the power rankings?
Okay, so ESPN has their list of power rankings out. It's their first preseason power ranking. NFL.com's come out with a couple of them. But the first series of power rankings from ESPN has the number one ranked Philadelphia Eagles coming in. And they say they've got a note as to who's under the most pressure. They say it's the new offensive coordinator, Kevin Petullo. You go down the list, you got Kansas City Chiefs, number two. Buffalo Bills, number three. We still don't hit the Dallas Cowboys. Don't know what's going on there. You have to go all the way down to number 18. Back half of the league before you see the Dallas Cowboys there. One spot behind the Seahawks, one spot ahead of the Atlanta Falcons. It says the person under the most pressure is Brian Schottenheimer. Todd Archer writes, this doesn't mean the coach will be one and done. It's just that there's a lot for a first-time coach to deal with for any job, but especially with the Cowboys. Schottenheimer has the players buying into his message at the moment, but what happens if they lose a few games in a row? And it got me thinking about it, though, and seeing some of the teams that are on here. 18... as an assumption right now, might be generous, I think.
18?
Because the teams directly behind them, I think I'd say Atlanta's a better team right now. I think I might say that Chicago's in a better position right now.
What?
I think so.
You're going overboard with hate.
No, I am not.
How many teams do you have worse than the Cowboys in the NFC?
How many teams are worse than them? It's four.
Four?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah, it's the Saints.
Hang on. Let me go through the top down. The Giants... I would have the Bears worse, the Saints, the Panthers. I would pick the Cowboys over the Falcons, and then Arizona. That's six.
Yeah, the only two I have above them.
Maybe Seattle.
I have Chicago and Atlanta above them. That would be the only ones that I'd have above them, or at least right next to them. They're not definitely better than them to me. They're definitely better than four teams. They're definitely better than the Panthers. They're definitely better than the Cardinals, better than the Giants, better than the Saints.
The Bears...
I don't know that they're better than the Bears right now.
You hate Ben Johnson. You make fun of Caleb Williams. They stunk last year.
Caleb's really good, and his nails are on fleek. I'm just saying that it's that there's certainly questions in Chicago, but I can't say with certainty Dallas is better. Chicago's got a lot of talent.
Yeah, they have a lot of talent, but it's the
talent
Bears.
Wins ball games. Have you been watching The Gambler?
877-881-105. That Jimmy put together. Franklin injury attorney text line to hit us up live on the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Back to the other Cowboys documentary at 8:40 this morning. Tommy Yarsh will join us to recap practice last night in Frisco at 9:20. But why are the adults not with kids at Disney? I need to know a little bit of this before we plan any possible Disney trip. That's next on Sean and RJ on the Home of the Rangers as well. 105.3 The Fan.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, where I've been rocked to my very core in the commercial break by information from Carter Freeman. But the question before us was, which football direction do you want to go? NFL overreaction or reality? Or is Brian Schottenheimer actually under any pressure this year to go along with power ranking the power rankings?
I think that's a very interesting discussion.
Okay.
You want and that I'd one? Like to go there.
All right. So there's a couple of different reasons that this has come up, but one of them is in the ESPN power rankings, it says who is under the most pressure. And so it gives the power rankings, and we can get into that in just a minute. But then for the Cowboys, who's under the most pressure? Brian Schottenheimer. I just think that's absurd.
Okay.
And like, I've seen people text in, like, what would it take for Schottenheimer to get fired after this year? I cannot conceive of an on-the-field way that Brian Schottenheimer gets fired this year. Like, if there's some weird scandal that just, like, goes beyond whatever the Cowboys line might be, then maybe. But they go 4-13. I don't think that he will get fired.
1-16?
I mean, that just means you're on your way to Super Bowls, what the documentary told me. Although that was an extra game. But I don't think so, because then you'd get Arch Manning and he is like, that's what I'm trying to do and all that stuff. Maybe I'm in the minority in here and maybe I'm just mistaken. I don't view Brian Schottenheimer being under a particular amount of pressure to succeed on the field. I'm sure internally he's under a lot of pressure because this is his first shot. He said in the press conference when we were in Oxnard, he thinks it took too long for him to get his shot. So there you go.
I unfortunately think you're wrong. And it is all internal. Like that's where all the pressure is. Externally, the whole country is rooting for the Cowboys to fail or succeed. Like they are literally invested in the Cowboys.
It's tough to find indifference with.
Like name another team that everybody is committed to the Cowboys in some way, shape, or form. Either way.
Yeah.
And that's just how it is. So that's going to be a national, every day is a national topic. If he can block those things out, that's a thumbs up for him. Kevin, I often say this, I think the Cowboys in particular, and during the Wall 2.0, they made the comment about Dak and Zeke didn't understand how important each one of the games were when they started that rookie year for them.
Right.
I think that the team, because of the last 30 years of unsuccess, mm-hmm. feels like they have to make up for those 30 years on every play. And I think that falls on to the coach sometimes as well. Is it like, I'm trying to win 30 years of football with every single moment. And I think that becomes too much sometimes. It's too overwhelming. You can't hit a 6-run home run. It's not going to happen. You have to win a play. You have to win a game. And that's where I don't know. Sometimes you can focus in and be laser focused like that. Dallas does not seem to be the place that you can focus in and be laser focused. There are too many other distractions to it. And I think that's where the pressure comes from, is that it starts to become a waterfall. It starts to become quicksand. You can't get out of it and you're stuck in this. We have to do this. We got to win this game because it's so important for this. And I think that pressure is going to build for him. But the pressure to lose a job, I agree with you. I don't think Jerry Jones is going to want to admit after 1 year that he messed up. But I also think I'm giving Shoddy a chance, man. I'm going to give him that chance to prove to us.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And I think as Cowboys fans, I would hope we're all rooting for him to be successful.
Yeah.
But I go back to the winning or the losing. I just think that it's been established that Cowboys head coaches, sometimes I wonder if Jerry builds in a little extra time for them because he knows that they have to deal with unusual circumstances. And that's why maybe they're not so quick to pull the trigger on firing some of these coaches.
No, that's interesting because you say unusual circumstances. Barry Switzer makes comment about that. He's talking to the team, and he's like, after all the things that we have to go through, and he's like talking granted, Barry Switzer did not have an easy, place to step into whenever that happened. So when you say that, though, you're saying the set of circumstances are the national media.
No, look, I swear, I'm not trying to be like just flippant or sarcastic. I think the extenuating circumstances are Jerry. I don't think it's the media or anything else. I think it's Jerry. And so I do kind of wonder that. Now, speaking of the power rankings, where would you put the Cowboys in the power rankings as we head into the start of the season?
Kevin, what do you think?
I predict you think 16 or 17.
Middle of the pack.
Okay.
16 or 17.
Alec? What say you?
18.
Ooh. That is actually correct. So they are one to two below the middle, depending on how you want to slice that up. The Dallas Cowboys are ranked as the 18th best team in football heading into the regular season. Corey, I'm going to assume your answer is yes. Alec, do you think that feels about right to have the Cowboys in about the middle of the pack?
Yeah, I'd say so. That feels like where they kind of hang out most times throughout the season. And then once you kind of get a clear idea of the playoff picture, then you'll start to see if they go more towards one side or the other. But yeah, at this point, again, like we joked about earlier in the show, but it's not a joke. We don't know what this team looks like because they have not shown us literally anything in the preseason. So we can only go off of what we know on paper.
In a bizarre way, does that add even more intrigue to that Eagles game? I'm not saying you'd be like, I don't care. But it feels like that will add even more in that first half. You're like, holy crap, I didn't know they could do that.
Yeah, because if they go out there and they score 35 points, I'm going to be like, I'm wrong about a lot of things in life, and I need to recalculate and try to figure out what I'm doing wrong here.
Yeah. Now, who do you think is the worst team in all of football?
Man, I feel like it's Cleveland.
Maybe. Cleveland is one of the last three teams, but are they the worst?
Are the Jets in that conversation?
Oh, how dare you. The Jets are only 28th.
Okay, so they're pretty close.
They will not abide by your disrespect. By the way, Cleveland is 30.
Saints.
Ooh, the Saints, 31. By the way, did you see Kellen Moore? And again, I am just assuming this is the way he meant it. He said the quarterback competition will continue.
Until the middle of the season, probably.
And I feel like what he really was saying was, hell, I don't know. I guess keep going.
He's really just waiting for the player coach moment.
Yes. All right. You guys have named three of the bottom five, but not the worst team in all of football. Want to take one more shot at it.
Alec?
That would be the Tennessee Titans.
Nice work.
Is correct. The Tennessee Titans.
Because the quarterback just punched a defensive lineman.
That's man. Right.
Or shoved him.
I could see on the one hand, you're like, I love that competitiveness. But on the other hand, I could see how you'd be like, hey.
She's got a penalty.
Don't do that for a variety of reasons. Now, the whole reason that they're last is because the New York Giants have rocketed up from 32 to 29. No doubt. Hey, that's up. No doubt to the play of Jackson Dart.
Probably so.
But those are your worst five. At 28, the Jets, then the Giants, the Browns, the Saints, and the Titans.
In the conversation you had earlier, Kevin, about Arch Manning, did you bring up when he was asked about the AP poll?
Oh, no. What did he say?
They were like, hey, you're ranked number one in the AP poll. And he was like, that doesn't mean anything. And I was like, what a smart thing to say. And then he was like, I don't even know how they get these. We haven't played a game yet. And then he was like, how do they rank them? And I guess it's just ranking rosters, you know?
What is more profound, that or John Kruk, when they said, when the guy who invented time and the clock, how did he know what time it was?
John Kruk said that?
Yeah. I don't know if somebody else said it first, but obviously that's been circulating around quite a bit.
That is the most profanation thing I've ever heard.
I don't think you said that right. All right. We did the worst. We did the middle, which is pretty much where the Cowboys are always are. By the way, here's the teams around the Cowboys. Steelers, Seahawks are 16 and 17. And then the Falcons and Dolphins are 19 and 20. Does that feel about the class of team?
Yeah, that's all right. We're pretty accurate right now.
Tell me who are the top five. 877-881-1053. Franklin, Franklin Injury Attorney. Text line if you want to get involved in the conversation, or Twitch or YouTube or you guys right here and right now. Who are the top five?
Oh, man. I feel like the Eagles are in there.
Eagles?
That is just because I feel like they're in there, not because... I'm not
Corey,
for them.
You'll be happy to know the Eagles are number one.
I'm not
on the list.
All right. The Chiefs?
Chiefs are second.
Okay, because those were the last
that
two.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
I feel like the Lions.
Ooh, the Detroit Lions are number five. Good job.
Okay.
You're still alive.
And then probably Buffalo and Baltimore.
Who would you put first?
Buffalo.
Okay, good call. So it goes Philly 1, Kansas City 2, Buffalo 3, Baltimore 4, Detroit 5, and then just out of curiosity, or just to throw it out there, not out of curiosity, the Washington Commanders are 6.
Yeah.
And then you would ask...
They're a hot team, man. Yeah,
absolutely. You would ask about this player earlier. Number 7 is the Green Bay Packers.
Yo.
And I was going to have this as an NFL overreaction reality. I can just ask you guys right now. Do you think that Jordan Love will be a real candidate in the MVP race? Like, no, I know inherently he'll get at least some attention because he's a quarterback. But I'm saying when we get down the stretch, could you see Jordan Love as a viable MVP candidate?
If he stays healthy, obviously, I do. Because that offense is built to score. And he... He can tally up a lot of touchdowns. He can throw some interceptions too, but he can tally up a lot of touchdowns. And so I think that'll stand out. But again, health for him is going to be the entire key.
Okay.
Because, I mean, their receiving group is, I mean, Christian Watson's in the mix, and then there's a bunch of, Jaden Reed's really good, but not, I don't think that you had one receiver that you were like, oh, there's the connection with Devontae Adams. You know, it wasn't like that. So he spreads it around a lot, and he moves that offense. I think he can be, but health's going to be a key factor for him.
Alec, going down the stretch, do you see Jordan Love as a real MVP candidate?
I do. I honestly do. And I know we had the conversation a little bit last year at the beginning of the season. Like, he's got super long odds, but he's good enough to where putting $10 on it, you know, would be a lot of fun. But I think he is good enough to where it's not a stupid bet, you know, and even not in a betting sense. I do think he just looks so composed. Even when, like, last season, I didn't think that offense was super great around him. I didn't think they were bad, but... He just looks like a pro out there. There's no way to really explain it without putting film in front of you and saying, look at, he looks like, in some very specific ways, I'm not projecting his career, in very specific ways, he has some of the same poise in certain sets that Rodgers did in that Green Bay system.
By the way, as long as we're talking about Green Bay, I just wanted to throw this out there. Jay Glazer had tweeted this out and said that the Packers had him talk mental health with their players and their coaches. And so I just wanted to say I appreciate very much Jay Glazer taking part in that. I appreciate the Green Bay Packers for their efforts to, like, get that message to their players, their coaches, and destigmatize. We talk about mental health all of the time on this show. And so props to them for getting it done. And always a great reminder, NamiNorthTexas.org. If you're looking for an organization of professionals, and they have so many free programs. So if you're struggling for any reason, wanted to throw that out there.
Yes, absolutely.
Good job, Packers.
Here we go. It's hour number 3 of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. And joining us now, friend of the program, NFL analyst Mark Schlereth, brought to you by Renegade Fantasy. The biggest evolution of fantasy football is here. Join the elite players that have already played Renegade, home of the clock stoppage and real-time substitutions. And a good afternoon, Mark. How the heck are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
We're doing good. You know, we're trying to figure out if this Cowboys team's going to be any better or more entertaining than last year. I guess George Pickens coming aboard, you know, what's the upside here on this Cowboys season?
Yeah, well, I mean, George Pickens, big-time player, right? Big-time playmaker. Now, you know, I mean, obviously, he's had some issues in Pittsburgh, being disgruntled and, you know, being angry and all those things, and sometimes not playing up to his potential. So, you know, that's one of those things that you're going to have to deal with if maybe he doesn't see any time or any balls come his way with CeeDee Lamb on the other side. But he's a big-time player, man. If he's motivated and he's willing to do the dirty work, you know, run the for the love of the game routes and all those kind of things, then it creates a great 1-2 punch, arguably one of the best 1-2 punches in the National Football League. So it on the surface, I think, is a great move by the Dallas Cowboys.
How much does that help Dak? How much can that free up? I mean, even before the injury last year, he was not having a great season.
Yeah, well, really, it comes down to how well you're going to run the ball, how well you're going to be physical, how well you're going to establish yourself in that vein so Dak can do the things that Dak excels at, right? Not only throwing the football, but running that play action stuff, creating the big time opportunities in the passing game, because that's really where it comes from. And, you know, I mean, obviously, if you throw a go ball, you know, you have an access corner out there on the outside and you throw a go ball and you complete that go ball, that's great. That's awesome. But the running game is what establishes opportunity for you to take that 8-yard throw to a wide open dude who doesn't have anybody within 7-8 yards of him and turn it into a 30-40 yard gain. You know, one of those type of explosives, the easy throws, you know, the things that don't take as much skill or timing. And that's all based off how well you run the ball. And we all know that last year that was an issue, especially in a day and age. You know, you watch how the cyclical nature of the league, and you watch how the run game exploded last year and what teams are trying to do this year. I watched a ton of preseason, just, you know, kind of bouncing around from game to game to game. And the number of just smash mouth fullbacks I've seen in the league, when they were like the dodo bird, man, they were extinct for a while. And all of a sudden I'm watching Seattle roll out new fullbacks. I'm watching Baltimore roll out a bunch of new fullbacks. You know, it's amazing. And part of it is the way defenses operate, right? There was so much passing game going on, and the linebacking core got so small so they could run with these guys, the tight ends and the backs out of the backfield. And next thing you know, everybody's playing this 4-2 front, and, you know, the linebackers are 215 pounds, and the offenses are going, wait a minute, let's put a 320-pound guard or a 310-pound fullback on this guy and just clobber snot him, you know? And so it's fun to watch. For me, it's fun to watch how that's changed.
Stink, can you fathom why the Cowboys wouldn't want to pay Micah Parsons?
Nope. I mean, I don't know. Like, you knew that Micah Parsons was a star when he was a rookie. You knew it. The guy is phenomenal. You knew it. Everybody knew it. Why would you wait? Why would you cost yourself more money in the long run? When you find a star, as soon as you can pay that guy, you pay that guy, even if you have to set the market, because you know 6 or 7 guys are going to jump over him and he's going to become a bargain. And then you continue to kick the can down the road, renegotiate, re-up in the middle of his contract. And ultimately, you save yourself cap space. You save yourself money. When you wait, like the Cowboys waited with Dak Prescott, like the Cowboys waited with CeeDee Lamb, when you wait, like they're waiting with Micah Parsons, what it does is it keeps you from really participating in free agency. And listen, man, free agency isn't the end-all be-all, right? It's not great. You're going to pay A-plus money for B-minus players. But the one thing that free agency allows you to do is to plug a hole, to instantly plug a hole with a veteran player, so at least you don't have to say, okay, now we got to chase that position in the draft. It allows you to kind of go, okay, let's plug that hole, and then, hey, we need to address, you know, that on our football team, but now we don't have to address it in the first round. We can take the best player that's out there that's going to benefit our football team. Maybe we address it in the second or third round. But, like, when you wait and wait and wait, you don't get to do that. I just don't – I don't understand the philosophical approach the Cowboys have when it comes to signing their stars.
I think all of us are with you on that. It is absolutely
just mind-blowing. Mark Schlereth with us here in the G-Bag Nation. I want to go back to that Cowboys offensive line with you because I agree 100%. They're only going to be as good as that starting five up front. With Connor Riley coming in from K-State, Clayton Adams being brought over from the Arizona Cardinals, how much better do you think this offensive line can be with the addition of a guy like Tyler Booker, who they took in the first round?
Yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen, right? Because there's so much that goes into being good as an offensive line. It's given the opportunity, being given the tool set to be good. You know, like so much of it comes down to play calling. And I will tell you, I'm a big Schottenheimer guy. And you know, just watching him call plays and watching him establish the run game, be it in Seattle and other places that he's been, he's always been a guy that resonates with me. Like when you take a lot of sacks or you don't play well up front, you know, it's so easy to point to the offensive line and say, hey man, the quarterback got sacked. Well, let me just tell you from my perspective, quarterback sacks, that's more of a quarterback driven statistic than it is an offensive line driven statistic. So most of the sacks or a lot of the sacks come from a quarterback not throwing the ball on time, by pulling it, by playing off schedule, by trying to escape out of the back of the pocket, all those things. And then when it comes to protecting a quarterback, a lot of that has to do with the way you call plays. And let's face it, in today's game, like it's different than when I played. Man, we threw a ton of seven-step drops. We threw a ton of five-step drops, the multiple hitches. Now you look at the game, man, so many three-step drops, so many five-step drops that the ball is out right now, all in gun or majority of it's in gun. Tons of bubble screens that we didn't even have. When I first got in the league, there was no such thing as a tunnel screen. A wide receiver screen didn't exist, right? And so there's so many more opportunities to have the ball out of your hand right now in today's game that a lot of you being good up front has to do with how committed you are to running the game, running the ball, how committed you are to giving your offensive lineman an opportunity to be aggressive in the passing game. And so a lot of that falls on coaching. So you know, there's a lot of different factors that go into it. It's not just having guys that are better than everybody else. It's your guys playing as a unit and be given the tool set to play as a unit. That's, to me, that's really what sets the really good offensive lines and coaches apart from the really bad ones.
Stink, when you look at this this Cowboys though offensive line, and they go out and they get a Tyler Booker, and to me, I look at their scheme and I kind of think, oh, it's power gap, and that's kind of how they're going to operate. And we watched some training camp practices, and it looked like that's kind of the way that they're going to go. Is what type of a back do you have to have if you're going to run a power gap scheme? What kind of back is really necessary for that?
Well, I mean, you know, I think one of the things is just understanding, regardless of the scheme, the back to me has got to understand the scheme, understand the weakness of the defense and the fronts. And, you know, it's really interesting. And I did this, I guess it was last week, did a Telestrator breakdown on the Stinkin' Truth podcast on YouTube. You can go check it out, watch it on YouTube. But it's really cool because it was about entry points, the entry point of the running back. And, I was talking about R.J. Harvey in Denver, and one of the things I talked to Sean Payton about and talked to Zach Streif, their offensive line coach, about is one of the big issues we have with the running game is our entry points. We didn't coach it very well, and our running backs didn't really understand where they need to enter the line of scrimmage, which, you know, is something that we talked about all the time when I played, but it's probably something that most people have never heard of. And so, I'm watching the very first play of the first preseason game against San Francisco, and R.J. Harvey is supposed to enter into the line of scrimmage to run an 18 handoff, which is a zone play, and you're supposed to enter in the entry point is the inside hip of the tight end, so not where the tight end ends up, but where he starts on the line of scrimmage, stagnant, and R.J. Harvey hits it about 2.5-3 yards beyond where he's supposed to go in. That's where he enters. And if he hits it in the right spot, it's an automatic 12-yard gain. And if he cuts back on that 12-yard gain, he's one-on-one with the corner. And we used to say all the time, if your running back one-on-one can't beat a corner, you need a new running back.
Sure.
Like that's just not that, – that's how it operates. But he took a 12-yard – automatic 12-yard gain and turned it into a 1-yard gain because he missed that he missed that entry point. And so part of what we used to coach a ton is, hey, man, you got to understand the fronts. So in that particular front, you had the tight end lined up over there. Well, in that particular front, you had a five technique defensive end who's on the outside shade of the offensive tackle. And you had a what I would call a seven technique Sam linebacker on the outside shade of the tight end. And so automatically, if you're a running back, you got to look at that and say, okay, the odds are that Sam backer is an edge player that has to set the edge and turn the ball back inside. So what you want to do is press it, let the linebackers flow, but understand based on the alignment, there's going to be a natural cutback lane. You're probably going to have to cut back. And so just where you enter into the line of scrimmage has so much, it's so much of that is dependent upon where you enter in is how successful that run might be. And so that for me, for Dallas, whether you're running a gap scheme, whether you're running, a zone scheme, and by the way, everybody runs it all,
yeah,
right? It's just what you major in. And the other thing is what a team runs defensively. Because some teams are set up, you're set up more to have success running zone that week. And the next team you play, it might be all, they may be playing a jam front where you feel like counters and powers are your best option to separate that defense. So it just depends on the defense and all those things. But really it comes down to do your backs, really understand the scheme, what the weakness and the strength of the scheme are, and can they hit that entry point and trust what they've been coached to do?
Mark Schlereth killing it as always here with you in the G-Bag Nation. Now, which former team of yours is most ready to take the next step and win the division, Denver or Washington?
I would say Denver because I think the division is closer to the Broncos than it is in Washington. I love what Washington did last year. They converted on 20 of 23 fourth down attempts. Like, that's not going to happen. 87%, that's not going to happen again, right? Yeah. I mean, that can't happen again. They won a bunch. I think they won 9 one-score games. I mean, like, the odds are is they're going to come back a little bit. I think they're still really good. But I think Philadelphia is truly, if you look at Philly's, I know you don't like to hear that in Dallas, but if you look at their roster, top to bottom, both defensively and offensively, their roster is just ridiculous. I mean, their offensive line, I think, is the best in football. Their back is certainly the best in football. You look at their two wide receivers, I put that tandem up against most tandems. You guys in Dallas might have something to say about that. Minnesota might have something to say about that, but they're close. I think Goddard is a vastly underrated, just a football player at the tight end position, can block guys, can stand up on the line of scrimmage, can also get loose in the passing game. So I just think, and defensively, they're loaded, top to bottom as well. So I think they're just an exceptionally good roster. So I think Denver has a little bit better path, even though they got three really good teams, Denver, Kansas City. I think the Chargers are going to be much improved. I think the Raiders are going to be much improved as well. So, but I think just Philly is really the class of that division.
This Renegade Fantasy looks like a pretty good deal, huh?
I think it's going to be cool, man. We've been working on it for 3 years or so, and it's really cool because it's the only fantasy game that allows you to make real time substitutions. So, it's no longer you can sit there. Now, if you're an excuse maker, if you're a victim, like a lot of people are in this country, then it's probably not for you, right? Because you want to point the finger at your running back who didn't have a good day and blame him for losing your fantasy championship. But, in this app, if your running back is not performing, bench his ass and start your backup. Same with your quarterback, your receivers, you're the coach. You can make real-time decisions. You can pull your guys. You can start other guys in the middle of the game. Hey, in the second quarter, your guy gets injured, bam, put your backup quarterback in. Problem solved, issue solved, and you don't have to lose. And by the way, you can win cash prizes. We got a $5,000 grand prize for the guy in my league who scores the most points. So it's going to be pretty exciting. I'm really excited about it. MarkSchlereth.FantasyRenegadeFantasy.com. If you want to join into my league, it's the Stinking Truth Fantasy Showdown.
I love it, man. We look forward to talking football with you again this year.
It's going to be great. Look forward to it, guys. Take care.
Cheers.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.